I have been following this shooting, this mass shooting in Sacramento, for many reasons. One, just because of the horrific nature of it. Two, because we have yet to do anything meaningful in our country regarding trying to stop these mass shootings. And three, because everybody, as soon as something happens, instead of waiting to hear the facts or the details of what happened, they all come rushing to a conclusion and they start announcing their solutions of what we need to resolve the problem. And then when we hear the facts of the story, guess what? None of your solutions work, but you didn't have any problem politicizing something as horrific as a mass shooting. And that's what I think it is, honestly. If you hear that there has been a tragic event and before the details come out, you give the same list that you've given for years about how to solve the problem, but none of those things actually would solve the problem. And in fact, many of them are already in place in California, but you just use it as another opportunity to advance your political agenda. I have a problem with that. I hate that. I hate the knee-jerk response. It drives me crazy. And so those are all the reasons why I've been talking about this shooting in Sacramento, because I do believe there are things that can be done. And I do believe that as those of us who are pro-Second Amendment, that there are things that we should be willing to consider. Otherwise, we may outright lose the right to bear arms before we know it. So that's on my list tonight. Also, inflation. I continue to see the president of the United States be blamed for fuel prices and for inflation. I think there are some places where he has some accountability, but there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that if Donald J. Trump were president right now, that the same level of inflation would exist. That's important to understand. Because if we just believe what we're being told by the finger pointers, then we're going to end up choosing somebody for the wrong reasons. And somebody who doesn't really know how to solve the problem or what created the problem. So those are a couple of things on my list. Let me know what's on your list. I'm not sure what's going on, but so far there's just a few of us hanging out tonight. And I'm not sure. I'm going to double check all of my settings again one more time here. It looks like everything is set up correctly. Can you let me know, David and Mary Jane, can you hear me okay? Can you see me okay? You obviously got notified that I was on the air. I'm just wondering, you know, sometimes you just never know with these social media platforms what the story is. But just not the normal viewership tonight. It could also be it's spring break for a lot of people. So let me know. Say hello if you can see me or hear me. And let's get into some of the details of... let's start with... Oh, and one other thing before we get into... before we get into the issue of the Sacramento shooting and inflation. You may have received an email from me this morning. Chris Larson says hello. He is joining us on Facebook. And David says, yes, we can see and hear you. So thank you. Just maybe everybody's on spring break or something tonight. But, you know, the truth of the matter is most of our viewership and listenership happens after the live broadcast the next day. So I just like having your feedback and your questions and your commentary. We have a nice tight-knit group here that usually gets together on a Tuesday night. So either way, we will cover the topics because people will want to dive in and listen to them tomorrow. I mentioned this earlier when I was out. I did a Facebook Live earlier today, just letting people know where I was at so they could come by and visit the RV. I sent out an email this morning saying, or I can't speak tonight, issuing praise on Mitt Romney and several others for saying that they were going to vote in favor of President Biden's Supreme Court nominee, saying that they don't completely agree with everything that she has done, but that she is highly qualified and meets their standards. And so Mitt Romney, once again, knowing he's going to get a bunch of flack, he votes in favor, or he says he's going to vote for her confirmation. So I sent out this email, and I'll, if you missed it, let me see if I can just pull it up here, some of what I said, just so you can get a flavor of what the response was. Wait a minute. Let's see here. Give me one second here and I'll find it. Nope, not there. Not there. Sorry, guys. I should come on a little bit more organized, but we're just friends here, right? It's all right. You know what? Am I in the right place here? I guess there's more than one way for me to find this. Sorry, everybody. It'll give everybody else time to join us. Brad joining us. He's saying, hey, Jay from Moroni. Hey, Brad, great to have you with us tonight. Thank you so much. Let me find what I... Let me get things organized here. Give me one more second. Just so I can tell you exactly what I said. Because the response... What I'm trying to get to is the response was, wow. That's all I can say. The response was... I'm going to say uncalled for. Here's, let's see. Almost there. Okay, here's what I said. I said, Mitt Romney has announced that he would support Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation to the Supreme Court. And then we put in a quote from Mitt Romney. He said, while I do not expect to agree with every decision she may make on the court, I believe that she more than meets this standard of excellence and integrity. And then Republican Senator Murkowski and Collins also have signaled their support for Judge Brown Jackson. I said, I applaud these senators for standing for principles over politics. Doing so is rare in these times where the GOP will censure legislators who vote their conscience rather than follow extreme party policies. I said, we cannot count on Chris Stewart to choose principles over party because he knows he will lose financial support and power if he doesn't follow the extreme minority. That is why I'm running for Congress and I need your support. Will you become a monthly donor of $10 a month or consider a one-time donation? Now, we did get donations from this, so thank you to those of you who have donated. If you haven't donated, please, we need your help. Go to jmacforutah.com. And make your donation. Now, I had several people who disagree with me on this respond with very positive feedback, you know, constructive feedback. Hey, Jay, have you thought about this? Hey, whatever. What continues to just blow my mind are the people who throw around terminology that if they truly believe this, then this is how far some have gone. But basically, I was called a traitor. Traitor to my country because I agreed with Mitt Romney. Traitor. This is traitor. Do I have to look up the definition of traitor? And people, vile attacks on me and my character, vile attacks on Mitt Romney and his character, that he has some ulterior motive. This is where, and I want to be careful because I know this is not the majority, but these are the people who we hear the most. They are the loudest. People who literally believe now that if you disagree with how they feel the country should be run, that you are a traitor to the country. As if, and this is what you would have to believe to come to that conclusion. You would have to believe that somewhere out there, there is a prescription of exactly how government should be run, our government should be run, and that anything outside of that is being a traitor to your country. As if the Constitution tells us what we should do when it comes to taxation, when it comes to social programs, when it comes to choosing Supreme Court nominees, when it comes to all of these things. People act as though the founding fathers chose one way to run government, and anything outside of that is traitorous to the country. And what's scary to me is that nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, there were founders who wanted to throw out the Constitution every 20 years and start over because they always wanted the government to be of the people who were living, who were alive at the time. They didn't want a situation where we were forced to live according to the beliefs of people who lived 200 years ago. Now, I think that what you want is balance, because I do think there is value in much of the belief system of the founders from 200 years ago. But I'm here to offer you a little secret. This is just between you and me. The Constitution doesn't say squat about these things. The Constitution is one of the shortest government documents in existence. And it only prescribes the process of how we go about deciding how our government should be run. It does not prescribe conservatism over liberalism when it comes to specific topics. Now, I do think that it limits government power and that liberals typically want to expand government power, and the conservatism that I've always believed in wants to limit government power, and I do see the Constitution as a limitation of government power. But when it comes to 95% of the issues that Congress faces, that the president faces, there's nothing in our founding document about these things. And that's by design. The beauty and wonder of our government is that everybody gets to choose representatives and send those representatives to represent their voice and their beliefs in legislative halls. The beauty and the inspiration of the Constitution is that it just tells us how we're to come to conclusions. But it leaves those conclusions up to we, the people. This is how you end up with a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. It would have been so different if the founders would have said, no, there is only one way of doing things, and anything outside of that is traitorous to your country. This country would have fallen centuries ago if that was the case. And it is remarkable to me that people who claim to love and appreciate and celebrate and uphold the Constitution many of them are the ones acting as though the Constitution somehow prescribes the specifics of government. How else could they claim that supporting a Supreme Court nominee or a senator who supports that Supreme Court nominee is traitorous? How else can you come to that conclusion? Brad says, advise and consent the nominee as qualified. Isn't that the principle, or am I mistaken? She's obviously qualified, even if we don't agree with all of her rulings. Yeah, she is obviously qualified. And Republicans tried to make a lot of hay over sentencing that she issued over child pornography, people who were convicted of child pornography. But it was quickly debunked and pointed out that her rulings and her sentencing were not different than conservatives on the court. And this was a way to go after somebody who was qualified. And I believe people would hear the sound bites, and many of those sound bites got translated into my email this morning without people actually researching it and figuring out what really has gone on. Do you really think that it's traitorous to support only a Supreme Court candidate that you would support? Think about this. We are entering a place where, in the name of the Constitution, people are actually taking on the characteristics, not of a free society, but an authoritarian society. Not of a democratic republic, but of a government that forces its will on all of the people. And it's being done in the name of the Constitution. And it's astounding. It's frightening, if you ask me, how easily now we throw around terms like traitor, and how the term patriot has been co-opted to mean you're only a patriot if you believe with me and how I want the country to be run. And if you're not in that, then you're not a patriot. My friends, that is not in line with the Constitution. That is not in line with any founding principles that I'm aware of. But we've been led down this path. We've been told that this is not a battle of ideas, where we send representatives to compete for those ideas in legislative halls. We've been convinced that it's a battle of good versus evil. And it's just not. Somebody who believes that the government, for example, should offer universal health care, something that I don't think is the way that we should run things. They're not evil. That's not a traitorous viewpoint. It's a viewpoint that I disagree with, but it is not evil. It's not like Darth Vader is on the other side of the aisle and he's got his lightsaber out and he's saying, we need universal health care. People who want social programs. We have allowed ourselves to be taught and trained that they're evil because they want to take care of people. This is not Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader. This is people in a society that has been blessed with a system that allows people to go and fight in the arena of ideas to be able to impact and influence their own government. And It's those who want you to think it's evil. They want you to believe that because they want to use fear-mongering. They want to stir you up with fear, hatred, and anger. If they can convince you that this is a battle of good and evil versus a battle of ideas, then you won't do the research. You will just be in a place where you're like a leaf in the wind and you get manipulated to and fro by your emotions. This was never the design of our country. I challenge anybody to show me how this belief system, my way or the highway, how that is anything prescribed by the founders or by our Constitution. And it's one of the things why I am astounded by the stated goals of both parties, of the majority parties. Their stated goals are that they want to take total power and force their way on the other half of the country. Think about it. Isn't that exactly what Democrats want? If we could just get the House, the Senate, and the White House, then we'll just bull ride over the right. And we'll just put all our policies in. That is an outrageous viewpoint. Republicans have the same thing. Man, if we just get, you know, if we just get the House, the Senate, the White House, when we get in power, we will force our will on the other half of the country. That is not the design of this country, and it is the worst way to run government. I don't know about you, but I get nervous anytime one party has all the power. I get nervous. Because some of those checks and balances, there are some benefits to a two-party system. And one of it is that you have to negotiate. The goal of any politician should not be to force their will on the entire nation. That's authoritarianism. The goal of any elected official should be to find a way to implement programs and legislative issues that benefit the most people, that fall within the belief system of most people. Not your third extreme over here or your third extreme over here. If we had statesmen, if we had people who were interested in the good of the most Americans at the same time, then they would not have a stated goal to take power and run over the other side. Their goals and their actions would be to get together and let's find out what we agree on. Let's find common ground in what we agree on and build outward from there. That is how you find solutions that benefit the most people. And don't you think that it would be wise and good policy to know that when you pass a law that it benefits the most people possible and fits within, you know, somewhere within the spectrum of what most people commonly agree? That's not what the parties are doing. They're telling us all day long exactly why we are different, why the other side is evil, misguided, traitorous, not patriotic, whatever it is. And they're doing it so they can get total power and then run over the other side of the country. It's unbelievable to me. It is unbelievable to me. Let's see, Chris talking about President Biden's Supreme Court nominee. Even Mike Lee praised her on numerous issues. And then he says, we see pure evil with Putin. Mitt Romney is not evil. Independent thinking is not evil. Apparently any thinking that is against what somebody has already decided is evil. It sure is easy to live life that way. I mean, that's the laziest way to go, but it's the easiest way to go. Because then you don't have to deal with them. No, nobody is. There was only one person who saw good in Darth Vader. And that was his son. Everybody else was like, get rid of this guy. Kill him, destroy him, do whatever you have to do, right? That is what the two parties want you to believe so they can manipulate you. And that is why we have very few discussions about policy between the two sides. The only time that happens is when there's an absolute must. It has to happen because there's some budgetary deadline that happens. Or when there is overwhelming backlash. And we saw that overwhelming backlash, Chris brought it up, with Russia. There were several Republicans who thought they were going to make hay and support Vladimir. And the backlash was swift. And it all turned around in 24 hours. Because yes, there is even a line that most people still have. Surprised me. But I was glad to see it. I just want you to think about the stated goal of these two parties and the idea that if you see a judge who is totally qualified, I mean immensely qualified when you look at her resume, and you support her, and you can't really tell what you disagree with. If I saw a clip today, Lindsey Graham talking about all of her qualifications and then saying, but I'm going to vote no. Okay. All right. Okay. It doesn't make any sense anymore. It's partisan over principles. All day long, my friends, all day long. Okay, let's, I know it's hard to talk about some of these issues like this Sacramento shooting. But I think it's important that we do because we can't and we should not run from gun violence in this country. And there are a lot of people out there who want to just say, nope, Second Amendment. You can't touch it. You can't do anything about it. And those people, I believe, are going to make it more likely that gun rights be taken away. Their unwillingness to engage in a discussion or entertain ideas that might work. Because we have generation after generation of kids now that are growing up in mass shootings and mass shooting drills. And if you don't think they're going to take the government into their hands when they're old enough and use the constitutional authority that they've been given to change, I think the writing is on the wall. And so we've got to be able to be willing to entertain ideas and solutions that can reduce gun violence while at the same time protecting the right for the vast majority of law-abiding citizens. That's why I choose to focus in on these stories. I do hesitate because I know that some of these shootings happen because people want media attention. I don't feel like my podcast is going to perpetuate that. And I do feel like this is a place where we can talk about these things. So let me tell you some of the things that we know so far. And I think it's also important, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, that we don't knee-jerk and rush to conclusions. And that's what we saw the mayor of Sacramento do, and the president of the United States did it too. Before we know the facts, they came running out to the microphone and they said, this has got to stop, and here's what we need to do to stop it. And they quoted all of this legislation that needs to be passed. And they did it before we even knew any of the facts about the shooting. I think that that is a terrible way to lead. And I think it smacks of wanting to get your policies through regardless of whether or not this particular situation fits into that. Let me see if I can find. Let's see. No, not there. So this happened on Sunday. And it appears to have happened right after everybody was leaving the clubs at night. Gunfire erupted, and I'm just not organized tonight, guys, so please hear, please just hang on, and I will find you the right stories here. This is the result of running a campaign for Congress and trying to do a podcast at the same time. Okay, so, sorry. Here we go, this is what I want. Oh, I know what I'm doing. Sorry, guys, out of sorts tonight, but I know exactly where I need to go now. David says you're doing great on both accounts. Thank you, David. I appreciate it. Okay. Opening up my Apple Notes here. That's where I put this all together. You guys, if you have any comments or anything else you want to talk about as well, we can talk about that tonight. Been going for 38 minutes, and I haven't even gotten into the topics that I wanted to get into. So, let's see here. Let's... I'm also running three different computers here, so here we go. All right. Okay. I can't show this to you on the screen, but I can read it to you. So, a suspect in police custody in connection with Sunday's mass shooting in downtown Sacramento, which left 6 dead and 12 others wounded. They had arrested one suspect. His name is Dandre Martin, 26, for illegal possession of a firearm. charges of assault with a deadly weapon and illegal firearms possession. Then the police chief, Kathy Lester, had said Sunday afternoon that authorities confirmed there to be multiple shooters in the early morning shooting, which happened along a strip of crowded bars and clubs. David says they've arrested three by now. Yeah, this is just when the story came out. But at this point, when the story came out, many details, this is Monday that I'm reading from. So this is yesterday, about midday. Many details surrounding the shooting remain unknown, including whether the shooters fired indiscriminately or were targeting certain people or groups, exactly how many shooters, and what types of firearms may have been used. No suspect descriptions have been released. So at this moment in time, on Monday afternoon, after the press conference where they say, we don't know how many shooters, we don't know anything about the guns, we don't know how the guns were acquired, we don't know anything about those things yet. Here comes the mayor of Sacramento, and he decides to speak out against assault weapons and homemade ghost guns. And he called for increased reach, outreach, and support for city youth. When pressed on the issue, he clarified that police have not confirmed whether the incident involved ghost guns nor whether it involved any juvenile suspects. So here he is after a shooting, not waiting to find out the facts, and saying what needs to happen to solve the problem. And this drives me crazy, because it shows to me a willingness to use a tragedy for your something that you have wanted to happen. And you don't know whether this fits into that or not, but you're still going to make political hay out of it. And of course, President Biden joined the fray. He called on Congress. Again, this is midday yesterday, before we know anything, he called on Congress to urgently take action on a series of proposals that he said would save lives, including banning ghost guns, requiring background checks for all gun sales, banning assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, and repealing gun manufacturers' immunity from liability. Before we know what happened. And you'll be interested to know that the state of California already has among the strictest gun laws in the United States. The state already enacted a ban on ghost guns. It requires background checks for all gun sales. The state has also banned assault weapons, which applies to many semi-automatic firearms. So the mayor's calling for legislation that has already been passed in California. President Biden's calling for legislation that's already been passed in California. And they're all doing it before they even know whether or not any of these things were involved. This always frustrates me. I don't mind if people come out and they state, look, you know, if the mayor or President Biden would have said, look, we don't know the details here. But there is a lot of other gun violence in this country that we could stop and that we know what the cause is. And so let this be a reminder that gun violence is still an issue. And here are some things that I have proposed that could reduce gun violence. But I don't know if any of those apply here. I guess it's that they're so absolute. They're just so resolute that we wouldn't have this if this happened. And it's not the way it's turning out at all. Now, I went on and I did a podcast yesterday, and I talked about some potential solutions to mass shootings, but I led by saying, we don't know anything about these shootings. So let's talk about the other shootings, and let's see if there are some commonalities so that when we do figure out what's going on, we can see if those things would apply here. And it also doesn't put you in a place where you're calling for laws and legislation that are already in place. So that was some of my frustration there. But we did find out some new information that is very interesting and concerning. So I will share that with you here. I haven't read the story because I saw it just before we went on the air, but we will read it together. How about that? Let me enlarge that size a little bit here. So, gun in Sacramento shooting was converted into automatic weapon for maximum firepower. A stolen firearm used in the mass shooting in Sacramento on Sunday was converted to be used on a fully automatic weapon. There's a word that sticks out to me right away. Do you know what word I'm thinking about when I read that first paragraph? It's this word right here. Stolen. In other words, there were already laws in place. What happened was already illegal. Not to mention that shooting anybody is already against the law, right? But with everything that is in place in California, a stolen firearm was used. And it was, I'm not sure if it was, I believe it was illegally modified. And so the belief here is that if we just pass more laws on top of more laws, that eventually people are just going to follow those laws. And I just don't understand that. So a stolen firearm used in the mass shootings in Sacramento on Sunday was converted to be used on a fully automatic weapon. Authorities did not offer more details about the weapon, but it is possible to convert a handgun into an automatic weapon that can fire like a machine gun. There had been suspicion that an automatic weapon was used in the shooting because video of the incident reported rapid fire. When the gunfire was over, 18 people had been wounded, 6 fatally. Officials estimate at least 100 shots were fired. Investigators have obtained a social media post made on Saturday by one suspect in which he wields the stolen gun, according to law enforcement sources. That post has since been removed. The Times didn't independently review the post. A second suspect, Martin's brother, Dandre Martin, 26, was booked early Monday on suspicion of assault with a firearm and being a felon in possession of a gun. Okay, one more time here. Besides the fact that it's illegal to assault somebody with a firearm, he is a felon in possession of a gun. So which one of the mayor or Joe Biden's laws or proposals that need to urgently be pushed through would have solved a felon in illegal possession of a gun? He will be booked at the Sacramento County Jail on suspicion of possession of a firearm by a prohibitive person and possession of a machine gun as soon as his medical care is completed. How many laws did this guy violate? How many laws? In a statement, police said that Smiley Martin, 27, was among the seriously injured in the shooting early Sunday and remained hospitalized under police custody. Videos have emerged of the shooting in downtown Sacramento that underscore the chaos of the situation. One shows a large group of people fighting on the street, followed by rapid gunfire. Another captures multiple volleys of gunfire, including what sounds like a possible automatic weapon. Sacramento police said they believe a fight might have sparked the gunfire, but were unclear about what prompted the conflict. One witness said she was about to walk outside of a club where she works when she heard one gunshot and then around like 30 or 50 rounds being fired. Her fiance said he and other security guards heard a commotion at a nearby garage. Once we went over there, it was pretty much a gunfight going on, he said. We were just trying to take cover because we couldn't tell where the shots were coming from, because they were coming from two different areas. But the one that really just freaked everybody out was the automatic weapons. That's when everybody was running and pushing. So what we have here is a situation where not one, maybe I'm wrong here, you can help me out, not one of President Biden's urgent proposals would have stopped this from happening. Not one of the mayor's urgent proposals would have stopped this from happening. But they feel free to suggest to you that passing more laws on top of more laws is going to somehow make a difference. And I am sorry, I just don't see it that way. I believe that any weapons-based legislation, so focusing on a certain type of weapon, I believe is misguided. And it is a fast road. You can call it a slippery slope. You can call it whatever you want. To just getting rid of more and more weapons while people will choose to break the law because they're lawbreakers. And the law abiding will lose their rights because they are law followers. And so it ends up being punitive to whom or to who? Who does it end up being punitive towards? And I can tell you, first of all, Michael joining us, he says, is it a contest to make laws? We need less, just saying. I think part of it is the idea that you want to send a message to your constituents saying, I did something. Look at me, I did something. There was a tragedy, I did something. And I understand the temptation to do that because these are the people who vote for you and we demand that they do something, right? I mean, there are people in the streets demanding that something be done. So it makes sense that a politician comes out and says, well, here's what we need to do. But when you apply a level of logic and when you consider unintended consequences, then those things don't hold up very well. And what typically happens is you make it harder and harder for the law abiding. And meanwhile, there 10 or 15 or 20 laws were already broken. And like Michael's going to point out, okay, let's make it 25 laws. Now they violated 30 laws. Laws are for the law-abiding. Now, don't get me wrong here. I believe that there are things that can be done. And there's a lot of research finally coming in about things that can actually reduce gun violence. And guess what? Very few of them have anything to do with focusing on the weapon. Instead, they talk about focusing on behaviors and choices. That when you can identify people who, from their actions, whether they broke laws, whether they made threats, whether they appear to be a threat to themselves or other people, that when you keep those people from acquiring firearms, then you can actually reduce gun violence overall while still protecting the rights of the law abiding. You see, what frustrates me more than anything is I am a proud gun owner. I conceal carry. I believe in the right to bear arms. I think it is important. And I want the right to be able to defend myself and my family. But what people are literally saying is that because these lawbreakers can't follow the law, won't follow the law, refuse to follow the law, then you're going to take away my right. And I'm the one following the law. You see how that's kind of baffling? Wait, I'm the one following the law, but they're the one breaking the law, and so you're going to put more things on me, and they're going to keep breaking the law. Now, I also believe that sometimes no matter what you do, you focus on behavior, you focus on choices. Ultimately, in a free society, our rights come with risks. Now, I think we should do everything we can to try and minimize those. But the goal should always be to protect rights first. And make sure that your unintended consequences aren't punitive towards the law-abiding while doing very little against the lawbreaker. It's one of the things that bothers me about universal background checks. I understand why everybody wants universal background checks, but they only work if everybody follows that law. So if you have, you know, the two guys at the trunk of their car doing a clandestine arms deal, the law expects that one of them's going to go, hey, dude, can you take a minute and fill out this form for me so I can do a background check? It falls down. The very people that you're trying to identify as those who shouldn't have a weapon are the ones who are going to do what these guys did. Stolen firearm. Illegally modified firearm. So that's where my frustration is with all of this. I know, I do believe that there are ways. Now, I think that a judge needs to be involved. I think that probable cause needs to be involved so that we stay in line with the Constitution. But I do believe that if you read the Constitution, that somebody's possessions can be removed through a probable cause and a warrant. And I believe that that type of legislation can be used, as long as people have due process and everything else, to limit access to gun ownership to people who are a visible threat. And that is a way that we can reduce gun violence. And I am here to tell you once again that if we don't lead out on this as gun owners, if we don't listen to and come up with solutions, we will eventually lose that right. And I know what you're saying. Well, they ever come for my guns. Well, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in one night. It's going to happen slowly. It's going to happen like it's happened in California. It's going to happen just slowly over the decades as more and more people, fewer and fewer people understand the right to bear arms. And they grow up in a society where there are mass shootings like this. If we just sit back and say, nope, the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed, shall not be infringed, shall not be infringed, and we close our eyes to this problem, you have to remember we live in a society where the people put in the laws and they can change the laws. And something even as strong as the Constitution can be changed, has been changed, for something not nearly as impactful as firearms. So I just believe we have a responsibility, and that it is the best way to protect our right to be thoughtful and considerate and look at research and find ideas that can work while protecting my right and your right to bear arms, unless through probable cause and the judicial process, it is determined that you are a threat to yourself or to other people. That's the line I draw. So that's my long way around to say, hey, let's wait until we get the facts. Number two, if 20 laws were already broken, do you really think adding five more is going to do anything? Let's make sure the laws are not punitive to the law abiding. And let's take an honest look at research. And if enough research hasn't been done, let's fund research. And let's find solutions that really have an impact. And finally, let's also understand that every right that we enjoy comes with a cost. The greatest cost of freedom, in my opinion, is that there will be those who abuse that freedom. And when that freedom is abused, we are given a choice. Should we take away the freedom from everybody or reduce the freedom? Or should we punish the abuser of that freedom? Punishing the abuser of that freedom is the way to protect the freedom for everybody. Slowly whittling away the freedoms of the law-abiding because of the abuser, that's the wrong way to go, if you ask me. So that's kind of the long and the short. I was going to talk about inflation, but I've already been going for over an hour now. And I feel like because it's spring break week here in Utah, people's minds are on other things. So I hate to weigh you down with something like this shooting. But you know, if you've listened to me for a long time, you know that I don't run from these issues. I run towards them because I believe there are viable solutions. And I believe that the two parties want to polarize us and divide us over this issue so that they can fundraise and keep themselves in power. And I think it would be much better to choose representatives who can identify the common ground that is there in this country. There is a ton of common ground on common sense gun reform that is not weapons based, that can be had by people who want to solve the problem instead of amplify the problem. Those who want to amplify it for your dollars are in it for themselves. And when you're talking about something as serious as gun violence, that's pretty shameful, if you ask me. So with that, my friends, I will ask you to take a quick moment, if you haven't already, and make a donation to my campaign for Congress. Go to jmacforutah.com. You can Venmo. That seems to be the way of choice nowadays. You can Venmo, or you can make a monthly donation. Go to jmacforutah.com. Please do that before you go to bed tonight. Unfortunately, it takes money to win elections. And I think a lot of people agree with us that are here in this broadcast tonight. But we have to let them know that they have a choice and that there are other people out there who support this type of philosophy and messaging. If we can't let them know where they can turn and that there are options, then they will continue to feel helpless. And what happens when people feel helpless? They tend to get less involved. And that's exactly why the two extremes are just wielding all the power. Because the mainstream middle feels helpless. They don't know where to go. They don't know how to create change. And I need your dollars so that I can tell them, and you can help me, that there is a way that we can do this. So please go to jmacforutah.com. If you can become a monthly donor, please share, like, and share this broadcast. And I will be out tomorrow again in the RV. I think I've spent a lot of time over on the west side. I think tomorrow I'm going to venture up into North Salt Lake and the Bountiful area. So I'll let you know when I get there where the RV is. If you want to come by and pick up a yard sign or just say hello or pick my brain or tell me how you feel about anything we've talked about, stay tuned to all my social media and I'll let you know where I'm going to be. With that, my friends, thank you so much. for your comments and for joining me tonight. This is where I start the music. I don't have an outro slide anymore. Mary Jane says, thanks for another good report. The appropriate response to these shootings will become more apparent once we learn more about who was involved and why they took place. Very well said, Mary Jane, and we'll let you have the final word tonight. Everybody have a wonderful night, and I'll be back out there tomorrow. Hopefully I'll see you. Good night.